I'm Jonah Sowi. It is December 31st, 2020, and this is I Never Shut Up Anyway. Whew, it has been a long year. Holy shit, dude. Like, I don't even know where to start. Today, I just kind of want to sit down and speak to you guys, have like kind of a one-on-one conversation, reflecting on the year. I'm going to put in snippets of my favorite episodes. I'm going to tell you the stories behind some of the things that I haven't really spoken about yet. I made a cup of green tea. I am sitting in my grandpa's apartment, which is the apartment right above mine, which is where I record, because my house is not a place where you can record a podcast. Let me just tell you that. Okay, so right now, before we get into it, pause the podcast. If you don't have anything to drink, get up, make a cup of tea, make a cup of coffee, come back, sit down, and then we can have conversation. One thing that I found really, really funny about this year is, regardless of like how terrible it is and how hard it was and all of the shit that we went through, literally global pandemic, but it was this is the best shape I've ever come out of any year, which is to say how my other years were. They weren't like completely horrible, but I'd have these depressive spirals that I think I spoke about a little bit in a couple of episodes. And there really was just no reason for what triggered them. Nothing I could do to stop them once they'd started. It was these like long stretches of time where it just felt like my head was like literally dipped in a bucket of sadness, and I'd like all I could see was black. And that sounds like, you know, whatever, but it honestly is like the most horrible thing I've ever felt. And I was just terrified of that happening again this year, because it would usually happen over the summers or over winter break when I wasn't seeing my friends that much, because I kind of depend on, I'm a very social person, so if I'm just kind of stuck at home all the time and I'm like alone, I start to think that I'm lonely and that I have no one around, and then it just like triggers the spiral. And so I was really, really worried about quarantine that I'd end up feeling like that, because it wasn't like summer where you knew that you'd go back to school in 3 months or in 2 months. It was kind of like, I don't know when we're ever going to come out of this. And sure, at some points I found comfort in knowing that I'm on pause for this stretch of time, but most of the time it was just stressful. And I was stressed about the idea of spiraling, because it was just so exhausting. It genuinely is so exhausting. And I don't know what happened, and it's really, really funny when I'm going to say this, because when I was having the spirals, the worst thing anyone could have ever said to me was, just stop being sad. Like, just don't let yourself get sad. And then I'd always be really offended and be like, that's not how it works, and I don't even know why I'm feeling like this, and the fact that you think that I want to be feeling like this is a problem. And I just get really mad, and I've stopped speaking to some people because they always made me feel really uncomfortable about my sadness. But that is literally what I did this year. I had this conversation on January 1st, 2020, with my best friends. We were in Rola's house. We were in her room, her, Zaina, and I. Those are my two best friends, by the way, if you don't know. And we were just talking, and Zaina said this thing that I think kind of like started this ripple of me, you know, growing up this year, or like the growth that I did this year. I think it started at that moment. And we were talking about, you know, the year and how everything's been so weird. And she said, I'm going to say something, but please don't get offended. And I was like, okay. And she goes, I love you, and I know that you have a lot on your plate, but you're too in your head. And it was like such a normal observation, but I'd never actually thought of it as being in my head. And we continued, and I was like, what do you mean? And she explained a little bit that it was like, there were things that were really hard to deal with, and there were things that I could, that I had every single right in the world to be absolutely like wrecked about, but I dwelled in them and I kind of like sat and marinated in the sadness and in my head. And I think it two things, because it was coming from her, and she's like the most supportive person in the world, and she has never ever made me feel like I was ever a burden, or like I was, you know, annoying her when I was dipping for months. She'd always be there when I came out of it. And you know what? You can't expect people to be there when you come out of your spirals, and it's not fair. But she always was, and Rola always was. And that was kind of like what started this ripple of, at the it wasn't like, oh, I bloomed and then I was a butterfly, and no, that didn't happen. For like the entirety of January and the entirety of February, I had still had like my bad days, still had my bad moments. But then March came around and we had all these plans, and then suddenly we were in the house. And I was so terrified. I was so terrified of being alone for literally 2 seconds just because I might fall back into it. And that's kind of what started me purging every single form of art that I possibly could. It is my coping mechanism, and I know that that sounds so cliche, but it really is. I don't make quote unquote art because I'm an artist. It's just what happens when I'm trying to fill my time and trying not to be alone with my thoughts. But I also don't want to be with anyone. So, you know, what can I do to fill my time? And it's like, oh, I'm gonna paint something because that takes my mind off of things. I'm gonna learn this new song on the guitar because you need a lot of focus. I'm gonna write this poem because it's gonna help me get it out. And I started writing during the month of March. I wrote a poem a day. I think I wrote 19 poems during the month, but you know, I wrote a poem or the beginning of the poem. And then I remember making this list on my phone in my notepad. And it was, oh my God, the name's so cliche, but I titled it, I Will Not Fall Off the Deep End. And it had things like pottery, baking, painting the wall. And it was all these things that I wanted to do, but never had time to. And now apparently I had all the time in the world. And so we did. And I never actually ended up taking up pottery just because my mom said it would make a mess, and it would have. But we painted the wall on my balcony. I wrote a poem every day for a month. I learned how to bake bread, and then I made cinnamon rolls, and I made a few bad batches of cookies, and now I can make good cookies. And it was just this like period of struggling for air. And you know, one thing about it, I really don't want to get emotional. One thing about it was it kind of felt like I really cannot believe that I made it out okay. And so April come, and April was a really mean month to me. It was kind of like looking like we were never going to come out of it. It was a really, really hard time. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to start watching a TV show. So I'm texting Rola. She says, you should watch the originals. And I'm like, you know what? I will. I'll watch The Vampire Diaries too. And that gave me like 13 seasons of a show. I finished it in like a month and a half. And that's because I tried to go slow with the originals, but it really filled up my time. And so when I finished the show, I looked up all of the interviews, all, you know, how you get obsessed with things. And my favorite character on the show is Caroline, who is played by this actress called Candace King, who I adore. And she's a stepmom to two. She has two babies now. She just had a baby. And she has this podcast with Kayla Yule, who, if you've seen the show, she played Dickie. Ah! She played, what the fuck was her name? Vicky Donovan. God, I hated that bitch. But Kayla's really nice. So they have this show, and it's really, really cool. And I started listening to it. And then I was like, I want to start a podcast. And it was so funny because it never occurred to me before that I wanted to start a podcast. I never like said that I wanted to pursue something like starting a podcast. it was just this like spur of the moment kind of thing, which is really kind of my thing of like, oh, I want to do this, and then I get up and do it. Which sounds cool, but it's hard because there's always something new that I want to do, so I never really finish anything. So I was like, you know what? Okay, I'll start it. My friends were really supportive. And then I started the podcast, and I did my first two interviews literally the next day. Like, I decided that I want to start a podcast. The next day, I had two interviews online. I interviewed Caitlin Kallman, who is my first episode, and then I interviewed Zane Frederick, who is, like, my sixth episode, I think. And then I decided that I wanted all to be Egyptian. And then my third interview, I think, was Ike. I can't decide if it was Ike or Farida, but he was either my third or my fourth. And that interview was kind of the one that made it all click for me. He's a great artist. It was a wonderful, wonderful like conversation. I had fun, but that wasn't the reason. It was the first musician that I kind of had on, and I really, really did like his album. And so I sat down and I was like, what are the questions that nobody asks my favorite musicians? And then I wrote the questions down, and I loved like the way I loved writing the questions. It was so much fun. The research aspect was really fun. And so the first three interviews that I'd done, or the first two interviews that I'd done, were really nice. But this one, I don't know why, but it was just the one that made it click for me. I was like, oh, I'm going to keep doing this. I like this. This is really fun. And I just like wrote these really elaborate questions. And it's so sad that like three of my favorite questions got cut off, because at that point I hadn't realized how to cheat the system, because Zoom's audio is like crap. So now I know how to cheat the system, but then I didn't. But that was kind of, I remember finishing the interview and having kind of like an, oh my God, I think I just found like something that I want to keep doing for a while. And so that's why it's kind of one of my favorite interviews, even though it's not the one that's most listened to. It's not, you know, it doesn't have the best audio. I still had like minuscule editing skills. It was very primitive, but the conversation and the questions and just like the way that I made it flow kind of made everything click in my head for me. And so it's always going to be special. And so I'm going to leave you with a song that Ike sang in the episode called Sirene. It is off his EP. This is it.
Word on the street and now is that I'm falling, is that I'm falling down, down, down. Her name is tattooed on my lips now, 'cause I'm calling, calling for her all around. Baby, take me back. A few shots of gasoline turned a churchman to a sinner now. To oh, her door. Darling, I'm on my knees, I'm asking graciously, take me back home. Oh, darling, I'm on my knees, graciously. Heard she's got her own man now. Does he love you? Does he fuck you like I do? Serves me well now that I've done, did you wrong, done you wrong. There's the scream inside that I hide, keeps us alive, lets us survive. Like a virgin wears the white, gray where the sun don't shine, comes a doll with two black eyes. With all the vows and her ring tie, spoke my darling sacrifice like a deer into the light. Said we'll start a family, and now the only memory she has is the police sketch of my mask. Oh Lord, oh, only memory she has, police sketch of my mask. Oh Lord. Oh.
speaking of interviews that made things click for me, after that, I think I did like 4 or 5 interviews, and then I did this interview with Mare. So if you don't know who Mare is, first of all, are you not following me on Instagram? I literally post about her every 2 days. Second of all, she's this writer / poet from, she's half Irish, half Egyptian, and I had her on my podcast. Miriam is like one of my favorite people right now. And I don't really have a reason. I have multiple reasons, but I don't have time to give you the reasons. But the interview that we did was the longest one that I'd ever done. Usually my interviews were like 30 minutes. Hers, it was really more of a genuine conversation. And when I finished it, I was like, whoa, so my interviews could be more of like conversations than interviews. And the thing about this episode is that it really had like very little promotion. Like, I didn't promote it that much. And I think it's like the third most listened to episode. And everything clicked in my head for me again then, of like, oh wait, so my interviews could be A, this long, B, this natural and flowing, and C, this enlightening. And the thing about it is that I got a great friend out of it, and we had so many conversations about, you know, writing, and then about who we were as people during that interview. And so two things that I came out of, and I actually spoke with her about this when she came to Cairo and we met. We were speaking about writing and me kind of not seeing myself as an artist at the time. And I remember she was the first writer who I was a fan of who ever complimented my work. And she was like, I can't believe you're 18. It's amazing. I love your writing. It's really nice. And she had been following me, so I knew that she wasn't lying. And so that was kind of like an oh my God moment. And then when she came to Cairo and we were talking about my book and, you know, if I was ever going to put a poetry book out, and I was, you know, telling her about how I was uncomfortable with the idea of putting these poems that were about real people in my life, and they aren't really that romantic. So all of the poems are either about platonic relationships that I've had that have kind of like went to shit, or these familial relationships that I have that, you know, make me feel certain ways sometimes, but they are my truth. And so I'm not going to put a book out unless they're in it. And I was telling her how kind of like stressful it is for me to think the people that these poems are about could read it, and they will read it. And she just said, you can always discredit yourself. And I was like, what does that mean? And she goes, well, you could just like, I don't know, make up a plot line and make the poems about that. And no one could tell you that it's not true. It's your book. And so that kind of opened like a door in my head for me of, okay, I'm going to write this book. And so I met her in August. I started writing the book in late November. But, you know, things take time. But that was kind of like the moment that I realized. And so this is a snippet of a conversation that I had with her during our episode where she speaks about what it's like to be too much. She has this poem called Being Too Much, I think, or On Being Too Much. And her and I kind of just clicked, or like agreed that we were kind of 110 kind of people, and then not everybody was like that. And I think that this part of the conversation was kind of like the basis of our friendship, because at that point it was like 30 minutes into the call and we were kind of realizing, holy shit, we have so much in common. So this is Miriam Ahmed with me on my podcast. Okay, we've kind of like strayed really far because talking to you is just so fun, and I stopped looking at the questions, but yeah. We're gonna go back. Okay, so you have a poem called On Being Too Much. And if you haven't noticed already, my favorite part of the book is the first part, which is me, because it just feels like the most relatable and the most real part of it, which is
It's very raw. So there's a poem called On Being Too Much that really struck a chord with me. I have a poem called You Can't Divide by Zero that follows the same theme. Mind you, I hate it. I hate how I wrote it, and it's probably never going to see the light of day, but it reminded me of it. And this obsession society has with the mad woman persona and the hatred that goes hand in hand with that obsession. It's almost funny. And it's the circles that we're painted into. It's like sexy to step out of the circle and to have an opinion, but not too much. And it's hot when you're strong, but never stronger than a man. And it's exciting when you take charge, but never forgetting to make yourself like small again for your spouse, because God forbid a man feels smaller than you.
Yeah.
When do you think you first realized this paradox of like the mad woman persona and the love and hate relationship society has with it?
I think my whole life, I genuinely was before I could even understand what that meant, I was constantly told, you know, like, oh, you live in a bubble, you're so airy-fairy, like, everything is, you know, so overloaded for you, like, everything's so charged, and it painted itself out when I was younger, kind of to be, like, that dramatic sense, you know, that, like, everything was, like, I just made it into a big deal, I just, you know, but like you said, on the contrary, like it was strong or great or amazing of me to be the eldest child, to be carrying all this responsibility, to be, you know, powering through really big things, like carrying so much. But when a side effect of that is feeling so much because of the amount that I'm carrying, because of everything I'm going through, because I have the power because I went through so much and because I've like had to carry so much, everyone was okay to let me do that as a child, but no one was okay with the side effect of that causing an uproar of emotions in me, you know, and for things to feel so heavy all the time, and for me to feel this constant need to like express and to let things off my shoulder. And then I see it in my jobs, like I see how, you know, people want you to be able to take initiative and to make decisions and to take a lead and do this and do that, but if you have an idea or an opinion that's kind of outside of what they want to go for and plan, it's kind of like, well, don't break your pace now, you know. So I saw it in loads of things like that, and then the most and what kind of inspired this poem was in my relationships, like in friendships and particularly in my romantic relationship. Like in friendships, it was that friends are so happy to take everything you have to give. They're so happy to, you know, load you with favors and this and that, but like they don't want to hear you out when you're going through so much. They don't want to be there for you when every single favor that is being punched in starts to accumulate, and then you have no one to kind of hear you out or carry something for you, you know. But mostly and ultimately it was because the paradox hit me the most was when I genuinely was told that when I was in this relationship with this person, that the best thing about me was how much love I gave to others and how much I had to give and all that I did and the attention and care and everything that I resembled. Like that was what made me beautiful. That was what made me worthy of this person's love. And then the very same reason that he's giving to others as to why we didn't continue on is, she loves too much, she gives too much, she cares too much. And I just found that so funny. I was like, are you freaking kidding me? Because I could have said, you know, like you're like, you kind of say to yourself, you're like, that's kind of what the poem's talking about. It's like, I'll teach it boundaries, I'll teach it limitations. Like, I could have done that. Like, I could have not exhausted myself into your dreams and aspirations and who you are and our relationship. But like, when someone kind of applauds that, like when your whole life you've been told that all that is too much, yeah, like everyone in your life is like too much, too much, too much. And then one person comes along and goes, actually, the too much that you are is exactly why I love you. Like how you are is that's the very reason that made me fall for you. So you're like, oh my God, I can't believe finally someone appreciates the fact that like I don't know how to do a cup half full or half empty. Like I'm like all in or nothing, you know. And I'm like, oh, finally someone understands that. And you feel so safe and you feel like someone finally, you can finally lay your head down here, you know. And then they turn around and they literally take the very same words that they like praised you with, and they shoot it at you like a gun, and they go, oh, actually, that's the very reason that I couldn't stay. Like, it's just too much. So you're like, oh, funny.
One thing about this year that kind of got me through, and I really haven't spoken about this very much, maybe in one episode or something, but I'm a huge fan of Taylor Swift. And I say this with the most pride in the world. That woman, her ability to articulate emotions into songs and into melodies and words is just beyond me. There are so many examples of songs that I can like think of and be like, oh, you know, this song is amazing, that song is amazing. But the first one that comes to mind where when I think of this woman is a fucking genius. So, you know, leave all the hits out and think and actually listen to the genuine music. The hits are great, by the way. I think anyone who doesn't like Taylor Swift is just a music snob who's trying to pretend that they don't like pop music, and you do. Everyone likes pop music. Stop lying to yourself. You don't look cool. Also, it's kind of like built on this huge thing of sexism that the media did to her, but let's not get into that. I could have like a whole episode about how media portrays women in sexist ways. But anyway, one of my favorite songs off of her albums, not just lyrically, but also sonically, is You Are In Love. And the song is kind of like, not only do the words really like depict what it's like to be in love, or just paint this really pretty picture that she's really great at, kind of like painting a mural or painting a story within like 3 or 4 minutes. The music kind of sounds like what being in a car with someone you love feels like, or the silence when you're in love feels like. And so it's just like, I think I'm going to try to put a snippet and hope that I don't get copyrighted. And the thing about Taylor is that she's kind of been the soundtrack to everything in my life for, like, ever. Even before I admitted that I liked her music. Because I, too, had a very sexist 12-year-old moment where I was like, no, I hate her. I don't even know why. But this year, she came out with 2 albums. And when she came out with Folklore, I was kind of, like, at a point in the pandemic where I was like, okay, I've gotten used to this, and my mental health isn't about to like hit rock bottom if I stop fighting for air. But it was kind of like this pat on the back that was kind of like, here, have this, you deserve it, you've had a hard year. And then Evermore came out in December, and it was like, oh my God, stop giving me things. But these 2 albums, I could speak about them forever. The lyrical genius in them is genuinely so amazing. You could put the song lyrics in a book and then just sell it as a chapbook or as a poetry book, and it would literally fly off of the shelves because it's so beautiful. There's so many songs in this album that kind of feel like what I feel like about, you know, potential romantic relationships in my life. That, you know, it's like one of my biggest insecurities. And there's a song on the album, Folklore, called Peace. I remember listening to it for the first time. It was like 6 in the morning because I woke up to listen to it when it dropped. And Peace is like, I think it's track 15. I don't think I've ever heard anything that kind of like encompassed all of my insecurities about love and relationships into one song. I could sit here and like tell you why, and I could sit here and read the lyrics to you, but I think that you should just listen to the song, and I feel like you'll get exactly what I mean and why I think that it exactly encompasses what I feel. Another song on the album that I think is just phenomenal is Epiphany. I remember listening to the song and just like having tears in my eyes immediately. If there was one song that I'd say, oh, this song is exactly what 2020 felt like, it would be this song. It kind of, the first verse speaks about her grandfather, and he was he fought in this war. I can't remember what war it was, but he never spoke to them about it. He never told them anything. He could never speak about it. They didn't really know much. And so they had to, like, do the research and to search of, like, what happened in that battle that could make someone never be able to speak about something. And the second verse is just kind of about COVID and about, you know, what it's like for someone to feel like they're losing, they could lose their loved ones at any second. And also, you know, for healthcare workers being exhausted, but also for just everyone being so tired of being afraid of death all the time. A really good friend of mine did a cover of the song, and it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. She just sent it to me yesterday. I listened to it in the car. I cried. There's really not much more I could say. This is Haya covering Epiphany by Taylor Swift.
Keep your helmet, keep your license, just a flesh wound, here's your rifle. Crawling up the beaches now, sir, I think it's bleeding out. And some things you just can't speak about. With you I surf, with you I fall down, down. Watch you breathing, watch you breathing now. She's crashing out. And some things you just can't speak about. Some sense of what you see.
Oh boy. I have no words for that. I've listened to that cover like 16 times ever since she sent it to me yesterday. It's just beautiful. This brings us to the end of this. I've tried to kind of cover everything that this year has been to me, mentally, emotionally, creatively. I've mentioned some of the people who are really important to me this year, which brings me to my last point, which is you. I don't think you guys realize what you've done for me and my mental health this year, and my confidence, and my ability to stop thinking that I'm pretentious as a writer and as a creator in general, and as just an artist. You know, being able to be given a space where I could just sit down and speak and share my thoughts is crazy, because the one thing that always held me back was that I was so afraid of being somebody who talks too much or saying the wrong thing or bothering the people who are listening to me. And now I have a podcast where I sit and talk for 40 minutes every 2 weeks. And at one point it was every week, and there were people who showed up time and time again to listen to it. And I think that that just broke so many barriers in my head. And so thank you for that, and for emailing me, and for sending me Instagram messages, and for finding me on Twitter and sending me these really kind and lovely messages, and for sharing your stories with me. There is so much more that I have to work on with myself. There are still so many barriers that I have, and it's hard to feel victorious this year. Also because I kind of don't allow myself to celebrate myself, because I have really bad imposter syndrome. But I am proud of this year, and I am proud of everything that I've allowed myself to do. And I'm so thankful that I'm still alive, and that everybody I love is still alive. And I hope that you're in good health, and that you and your family are okay. And if you're not, then I hope that things get better for you, and that you don't feel like this forever. I'm Jonna Sowie, and this is the last episode I'm ever going to record in this godforsaken year. Happy New Year.